Hello, today's eighth episode of Inside the Auditorium, Women in Audit. Alex Gibbons, who's specialised, focused, is within fintech and the innovation economy, provides great insights into this rapidly growing area and how you can keep your skills current. Alex is the head of internal audit at HSBC Innovation Bank. Welcome, Alex. Hello, Alex. Welcome to the podcast. If you could please just introduce yourself and let us know who you are.
Sure. Good to meet you, Hazel. I'm head of internal audit at HSBC Innovation Banking.
And can you tell us a little bit about your background? Because I know that you first started in insurance and how you've navigated your career.
Great. Yeah. So it's a long time ago you're talking, but I did actually start as an insurance broker and I really enjoyed it. Actually, it's a market facing role and I'm very much a people person. How I got from insurance broking to internal audit and innovation banking is quite a few big strides. So one of those big strides was basically I got involved in risk management in terms of insurance broking. That took me to a new function at Ernst & Young called business risk consulting. And from there, I was involved in internal audit work. So that was really my grounding in internal audit and where I've got the strongest kind of background of methodology and how to conduct audits. And I went pan industry in that role because we were quite an innovative little team at Ernst & Young at the time. Risk was quite a new idea. Risk management was quite a new idea in terms of audit skills. So from there, I pushed around into insurance, reinsurance, banking. And I've stayed in banking because it's so fast moving, I guess. And that's where the innovation part comes. So I've really enjoyed things that are fast moving. I stayed in audit company for quite a long time, partly because I wanted to be at the spearhead of regulation, you know, where everything happens. And that's where I've liked my career to be, is really where things are current.
And so therefore, when you're talking about innovation, the banks that you went on to work with are more sort of fintech startups, is that correct?
Yes and no. I mean, I did some work with HBOS, and I then went on to work on treating customers fairly in HBOS, which was really interesting because it was sort of looking from a customer angle at everything. And so from there, I was really interested in how customers are treated by banks. And I guess it's why I've come down on fintech, because fintechs and that sort of leading edge are always looking at how can the customer experience be better. So that's really why I went to ClearBank, which was the fifth clearing bank outside the big four tier one banks. And they were a startup. So that was about, you know, 6 years ago. I went there and really only 30 people. And it was kind of just the right time for me to have a sort of role that was really stretching and really really kind of a little bit frightening, if I'm honest, in terms of the barriers it was going against. Like, it was going against those big four banks in terms of providing an alternative and was just getting its license as a bank. So that was a really exciting time.
And then, so do you think then really that most of these fintech companies are all around about sort of consumer duty now, you know, looking after your customers? So would you say sort of the most ideal candidate for innovator, you know, fintechs are probably more from the retail banking sector?
No, not necessarily at all, actually, because ClearBank is actually mostly doing work with bank to bank, so it's commercial. Yeah. But the obviously the end point is the customer. So lots of those commercial banks are dealing with individual customers. So there is an end point. I think generally fintech and innovation broadly, it starts with a small idea, and that small idea can be very simple. So for me, it's not a question of retail per se. It's broader than that, but it is someone probably thinking, I can think of doing that better. And that's what I like, is, you know, not accepting the status quo, thinking you can do something better, and being brave enough to have that idea and put it into the market and test it. That's really exciting.
And why do you think it's sort of more probably the Gen Z candidates that are probably more interested now in going forward to sort of more of a fintech, smaller environment than maybe some of the bigger banks?
Yeah, so look, I think everybody has their idea about where they want to work. I think with the newer generation, obviously, my generation weren't brought up on mobile phones or any kind of real advanced technology like we've got now. This generation and others before have been brought up with mobile phones, have been brought up with the internet, email, everything. And there's so much scalability and potential with all of that. And indeed, access to coding, access to computer skills, that's really now has to be in your tool set if you're growing up, getting an education. So I think we've advanced with technology so much that those skills mean that you can work from anywhere. They mean you can work anytime, any place. And that really means you can be a lot more flexible. So that's, you know, and then we've had COVID, of course, which has changed the landscape a lot. So I think, you know, I think it's horses for courses. Some people love working in big institutions. I think it takes a different mindset to want to work in a maybe riskier environment where your ideas are kind of at the forefront. But I think it's nice to be master of your own destiny. I think the people who innovate have a strong sense of purpose behind their ideas quite often, and that makes them, you know, really compelling to listen to.
Yeah. And then, you know, I noticed that you're CISA qualified. I'm not too sure when you got that exam in your career, or that qualification, should I say. But do you think more people within the fintech or in a fintech and innovation space should really have some interest or a technical bias now?
Yeah, I think it's fundamental to think about the security of the organisation you work in. As an auditor, you have to be to some extent technology focused, because that focus, you know, those risks are really out there. I don't know what caused the recent outages that were in the news about Sainsbury's, but quite a lot of outages now are related to cyber, ransomware, all that sort of stuff. So really ensuring you know about your information security and you're able to deal is a fundamental for internal audit. I agree.
Sure. And I've been to lately, I've been to sort of, you know, the big word on the street is about women in audit for innovation and technology. And from hearing from a number of people, and I may be wrong on this, but it does seem that you've got to be quite literate in it, you know, be able to read code and spend hours and hours looking through books, which especially nowadays with the younger generation and some of the learning skills, etc., you know, some people just don't have the aptitude to be able to do that. Do you find that you could probably teach maybe a good investment banking product auditor whose skills may be becoming a little bit out of date now, that you could actually teach them how to do more of the technology application side and to get involved in this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ISACA where I did the certification in information systems audit, that course is highly relevant, highly accessible, and it has a self-paced online learning, and really if you combine that with the ability to step into information security risks and issues in your organization, it's actually there's a lot of learning on the job that gets fully adapted. So I really think it is accessible. I wouldn't say it's inaccessible at all. In fact, they go out of their way to make it very, 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 very accessible. And also, I would say a lot of the subject areas are fundamental to risk anyway. So you would be looking at risk and control in those areas anyway.
Sure. And do you think sort of companies are taking as much interest in that and trying to, I know we're all talking about skilling up internal employees, but really, is anybody thinking about somebody as perhaps they may feel as far-fetched that's been working in investment banking or I don't know, commercial banking, to move them into technology audit? Or do you think fundamentally it's going to be too much to do that?
So I think the way I'm positioning my team is that everybody has coding knowledge and experience at the sort of ideal level. So that's on a trajectory of development. But actually, the awareness around information security is there from the get-go. So there's a baseline amount of information on information security. And then I think within 5 years, most people coming into audit will probably, I would say within 5 years, would need some coding knowledge and some knowledge of how programming is put together and what controls are around that sort of environment, for sure. To be at the right edge of managing the risks.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that obviously coming from insurance into risk and then into banking, can you elaborate on maybe which was sort of quite hard for you to navigate coming through that process, or something that helped you coming from that background to maybe entice other insurance auditors to getting to the fintech space?
Yeah, so Hazel, this careers are often sometimes a combination of chance, happenstance and taking opportunity and luck. So, it'd be interesting to think that my career was all, nicely planned out. That's just often how things happen. So I think one thing sometimes leads to another, and sometimes timescale, I've been working for a long time, so it's no surprise that, I've come around a bit. It hasn't all been, one day after the next, something else happened. But I think to your question, I think you go where things interest you. But to me, the key point about what I've done is just to try and stay current. Because the first thing that traditionally you could be as an internal auditor is, in the third line, away from the action, commenting on things that have already happened and kind of, yeah, that's very interesting. But so, for me, internal audit is actually about being on the front foot, seeing things before they happen, being proactive with your board, being proactive with your management team, enabling, really being a facilitator and an enabler and a ambassador for risk that's managed well. And facilitating that in the business. And that means that you're very current. So it's probably slightly forcing the edge of the role that I, when I first came into internal audit, I thought, God, this is, you were kind of after the fact. And I wanted to always be very highly relevant. So it's a combination of those two things, probably.
And when you say you want to sort of be relevant, I know, obviously, is that you've managed to do that by keep changing startups, because you've got a nice solid career. But in terms of changing to the banks that you've worked for, is that how you kept current?
I think I've always been excited by starting a team, founding a team, getting it on its feet, establishing a good momentum, establishing good working relationships with the business, being pragmatic about the size, scale and capability, and also the demand on the business. And all of those things are very much forming strategies. And I've always really, really enjoyed that, because I quite honestly haven't had 1 year of business as usual for the last 7 years. And actually that's where I enjoy the pace.
Sure. And in terms of being very creative, I think sort of nowadays as well, I'm sort of struggling with the, you know, I get into quite a lot of senior roles with fintech companies now, whether that was crypto or payments, whatever. And you know, I've had some companies that really want to employ just really somebody from the big four at 50, 60 grand a year that doesn't really know what they're doing, just so that they can show that they've got an audit presence, which obviously never works and gets, so you know, the person gets overwhelmed and, you know, can't do a framework. But also as well, I find that there's been becoming quite a big divide, is that, you know, people that have grown up our age that, you know, have been working for big banks because that's what you've been brought up to learn on, you know, grow, be longevity, grow your career through the same bank, and, you know, and they're heads of audits, and unfortunately their skill sets are not being looked favourably to the startup companies now. Why do you think that is?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think the landscape's changing a lot, right? I think the employment landscape's changing for everyone. You know, we've got hybrid working. I think that still has to prove itself. But I think the demands of employees are changing. And equally, you know, there's been an impact on skills and demands through Brexit. So this landscape is changing a lot. And I know that just in the announcements around the Big Four consulting, the amount of consulting is diminishing a little bit. I read news about one of the Big Four just the other day that you know they're not as busy as they were. So I think there's a lot going on. There's a lot to unpack. It's not simple to kind of comment on the whole of you know, the audit landscape and say, you know, there's one reason for things changing. But I do think that financial services is changing with digital so rapidly that that's having a very big impact, and with the impact of AI, as we'll see that happen, that will also have a massive, it already starting to have a massive impact. So, you know, I think many technological changes, many people changes at the same time, and also different demands of employees, not just employers. Those things are all having an effect. And I don't think it's been worked out what that effect will be. I think that's just a trajectory that's playing out.
Sure. And I think, you know, one thing I've learned coming back from the UK, you know, from Singapore, and, you know, having to probably re-identify yourself, if I can say. And I think people just need to sort of carry on staying current, and whether that's non-exec roles in some of these fintech startups and what have you, is something that's quite important to do as well. And just going back to sort of the, I know that, you know, it's already gone minimum from 2 days to 3 days in the office for a lot of organisations. I know global banks, some of the local banks in Singapore, and obviously Goldman's here, we're all back to 5 days working. You know, how, when is it that we sort of put pause on it and realise that we still need to do a job, right? And it's all very well to be flexible, but, you know, how flexible do we get until we sort of create a different society, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I think there's a debate still ongoing. But what I would say is I do think there's going to be skills gaps where people are at home 100% of the time, for example. You know, how do you train someone junior if they are at home, that they're not just part of the tactical day to day? Equally, I think it is important that people have some flexibility. I think the commute for a lot of people is horrendous. We haven't exactly got a fantastic transport infrastructure in this country. So, you know, I mean, that gets into wider societal stuff. But I think that, you know, there is probably a medium there somewhere where, you know, there's enough in-house training and in-house on the job working and developing and learning. I do worry about if people are at home all the time, that they're not going to get that.
Well, I think especially in audit, because you've really got to learn who your stakeholders are, you know, with any job that you're doing.
Relationship business. Yeah.
Just going back to sort of your career then, you was obviously you've got your degree in languages and literature, which is nothing to do with internal audit. And then you went on to do a MSc in management. Where do you think, if you knew what you knew now, would you have studied those degrees? And do you think having a degree nowadays helps within internal audit, because it's now not just about being a chartered accountant?
Yeah, I think the thing for me was fundamentally I really enjoyed those years, and I learned a lot, and I think skills are transferable. So yeah, I would do it again. I don't have any I wouldn't make any changes to my life actually per se, except I do know there's a lot of pressure on students now with student loans, and to end up with a higher student loan because of interest than you had, you know, before you went to university or even when you came out of university. I think that is a problem, and that, you know, and ending up with a large debt at the end of your university time is really onerous, and also, you know, might make you think going in, well, how do I really know this degree is going to give me a commercial kind of accelerator? I suppose I was pretty naive when I did my language degree. I just enjoyed doing languages. I was interested a little bit in teaching, and actually it was just I did some work for an economics lecturer when I finished my degree. And that sort of led to the master's in management, which sort of put me on a path to insurance broking. So one thing will lead to another. It's sometimes just a bit iterative. I've lived my life a bit more like that. I haven't been someone who woke up and said they wanted to be a doctor when they were 16. And I've always been very jealous of those people, actually, because they're so certain about what they want to do. But actually, I think if I look back on my life now, there are themes that make sense of why I did certain things, and I can kind of piece it together. So it's a logical thing to me, even if it doesn't look it on face value.
Sure. And is there anyone that sort of helped you in your career? Because you're right, it is quite diverse, and you know, I think this is what makes it really interesting. But just in terms, has there been anybody sort of, or a mentor that's helped you in your career, and if so, why?
Yes and no. I mean, I think I've actually quite struggled with that. I think largely it's been people who've encouraged me that aren't necessarily around me for my career, but have just you know, just supported me. So within my career, I don't think I've obviously had colleagues at work who've been supportive, but I haven't had a strong kind of mentor that's kind of led me through particular things, and that's probably, I haven't really wanted one, I suppose. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I haven't thought much about that, but I know it's something that is encouraged. But actually, I suppose I've been quite self-reliant, but relied on the advice of good friends and people I trust and respect.
And assuming that, and I am just assuming this, that, and I hope I can say this, but you're obviously working for quite new innovative banks and startups, etc. I'm assuming that maybe your the teams that you've managed have actually been sort of quite younger teams. Have you learned anything off them in terms of moving forward?
So I work with quite a young, energetic team, and really, I think what I like about that is just the amount of energy they bring, and the momentum that brings with it as well, just the sheer enthusiasm. So I think what I learn most from them is just. I can see when the energy is in a good place, you can get an awful lot done. And so I guess I'm just corralling energy as far as that goes, but also with a very clear direction and very clear objectives. I don't think there's any particular, I think one thing I've learned with teams is there isn't any particular real science, except that, you know, if you can show gratitude, that goes. I was always surprised how much, if I said thank you, that would really run a mile, and people will really do the distance if you ask nicely, and also you thank them, and also probably reward them as well. But you know, I think just saying thank you goes an incredibly long way. So I've learned also, I suppose, you know, I respect and listen and respect to everyone's opinion, because even though someone might be hugely, you know, new in the role, they, you know, they may have noticed something. So it's always good to even, you know, listen to people who you may think, well, what do they know? They're only a year into this, but actually they may have seen things from a different perspective, and that's always useful.
Sure. And what would, with regards to internal audit now, and I was going to sort of say, why do you think this is a good career for a woman to build her career? But I'm particularly keen now in terms of not just for women, but also for the younger generation. In your view, what does entice them to internal audit that makes it a good environment or a good career?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Hazel. I think I would have asked myself that probably 10 years ago, because I was desperate to get out of internal audit. And I worked in the second line, and I worked in first line, actually heading up a personal banking at a small bank. But so I was kind of desperate to get out. And actually, I couldn't think of a better place to be now, because you get such wide coverage. You get access all areas. Kind of like being a VIP, you really are allowed anywhere in an organization. You can get to the heart of problems really, really quickly. You can be such a fantastic facilitator for solutions for an organization. And one of the things I've really, really enjoyed, you know, innovation banking is a relatively small in terms of number of people, and it's been great to really cut across the organization and engage stakeholders and have discussions about how to solve problems. And you can do that really, really quickly, and it's just hugely effective. So you're actually a highly prized catalyst for change, and it's a role with an enormous amount of autonomy within a firm methodology and really appropriate quality assurance processes that, you know, give assurance to everyone, the board, stakeholders and the regulator that you're doing the job within the remit of a proper audit function. But, you know, it has a lot of freedom within those constraints. Fantastic role. I couldn't think of a better role.
I can't think of a better area to recruit for, to be quite honest with you, which so just getting back to sort of stakeholder working for a smaller bank and dealing with stakeholders, you know, when you know, the key is to have within internal audit is great stakeholder and communication skills. And like every role, there's something that you have to learn and engage with. And I remember years ago that, you know, if internal audit wasn't speaking to the stakeholders properly and being able to guide and direct them, quite frankly, the auditors would either have been walked all over or never been able to get a report done. I know that there's a lot of things done digitally now where you know you can just be called out on the paperwork, but just in terms, you know, how much carte blanche should we be giving these junior auditors to be taken seriously, to get the skills to go out and run their own audits, but also as well the audit division still keeps the respect that needs to get the job done.
Yeah, so I'll just speak for my own circumstances where I am. I'm very lucky. The culture within which I work is really one of doing the right thing, and also of huge respect for audit and for its findings and for continuous improvement. And not only that, the senior managers regime kind of props up our objectives in terms of, you know, we make sure that all our actions are tied to senior manager function leaders. And that kind of then percolates, the tone from the top is very important. But that percolates throughout the organisation. So the other thing is, that's one side of things, is the accountability regime kind of, and the tone from the top and the risk culture within my organisation. The other thing is that the onus on the employee base is that they want to do the right thing, and they view internal audit as a facilitative function that allows them to raise issues, self-identified issues, as well as, you know, when we find things. There isn't a defensive stance towards that, and this is what you want for your audit function. You want it to be welcomed in and for the recommendations to be kind of seized upon as, well, it's good opportunity for us to improve. And I would say if you've got that equation right, that's where it really accelerates to becoming a very, very effective function.
Sure. We touched on earlier, I just want to go back to the innovation piece. It's just such an interesting topic. And, you know, you mentioned earlier on, especially in terms of, digital, cyber, ransomware. Do you really think that, where do you think the risks for innovation banking are going to be for 2024, 2025 or going forward?
That's an interesting question. I think the broader market outlook for innovation itself, right, it is clearly there's a lot of work in the UK to do on AI to get around the governance and regulation of that. There's also continuing work that's needed in every organisation on cyber and ransom, information security, end user controls, ramping down on making sure that information going in and out of the organisation is bona fide, correct and authorised. I think my biggest kind of crystal ball gazing view is that AI, if it takes off as it's mooted, it will. The governance and regulation of that is really key. And I think we're only in the early days of that at the moment. I know things are accelerating very fast with ChatGPT, and organizations are even doing their own internal versions of it. So I think that's going to be where I'd place my bets. Sure. As to where things, you know, where to focus. I'm actually attending a governance conference around AI in May, and I think it's going to be really interesting because the European Union has put some legislation out there, so it's just going to be it's going to be important to know about that area, frankly.
Sure. Okay. And do you think that companies now, though, you know, everybody talks about AI, and like lots of things have been spoke about in my career in internal audit recruitment. And how seriously are these companies taking it? Because always the third line function, you know, do they get budget? Don't bring in, you know, don't bring in any revenue per se. Really, do you feel that people, you know, so there's not a skill shortage next year when this, I wonder how seriously the banks are taking it to actually skilling up people within proper AI techniques and sending them on courses now. And do you think that they should be?
Yeah, they definitely are. I think the full capability has not yet been, you know, we haven't got to the final frontier of what we can do with AI, and we don't know what the implications are for the employee base. So it's sort of still working itself through. I do know that there's a lot of experimentation, and I think that's absolutely right and appropriate. And you know, before anything's let loose, because that, you know, the, as I say, the consequences aren't fully known. So I think that we're in an experimental phase. It's going to be interesting. I don't think I can conclude on what the results will be yet. I think everyone's still working that out.
All right, great stuff. Well, look, thank you very much for your time today. I've got a few quick fire questions, if you don't mind asking. Where's the best place you visited and why?
Oh, wow. I think that would have to be Greece. And it's simply because the colour of the sea is so beautiful, and I'm a very keen swimmer, and I also like Greek food very much.
Me
and
too.
Greek people are extremely friendly. So yeah, Greece is kind of a very soulful place.
Sure. And what podcast are you listening to at the moment?
So I really like several podcasts. I like Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell's politics podcast. There's also one, I do like Desert Island Discs very much, so I like listening to those. So I don't like too much politics, but I like a bit, and I find them very engaging. And the Desert Island Discs, I just really like listening to how people have lived their lives and what music they like.
Yeah, okay, great. And if you're going to spend the day off, what's your favourite way?
Oh, gosh. It's probably going for a walk or a cycle ride, Hazel. So I'm lucky I live quite near Wales, at the weekends at least, and I really like going to the Brecon Beacons and walking or cycling. I'm a very keen outdoors person. I like to see greenery. So that's probably the key thing for me.
And tell me, if you was going to have your own biography, what would you call it?
Oh, I think I got asked this last week. I was on a training course. I'm just trying to remember what I said. What would I call my biography? Oh, I don't know. Finding purpose, I think. I mean, that's not very inspiring, but I can think of a better one.
Sure.
I'll write the words first.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you very much for your time today. It's been great getting to know you, and look forward to speaking with you soon.
And you, Hazel. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.